I'm a McGann, but probably not the one you're expecting. And you're listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 390. I'm Adam, and riding a bus in Montgomery, good times, is Isabella Pearson.
If today isn't working, tomorrow is what you have.
Mary Lang.
Tiny actions change the world.
And Debbie Melrose.
Don't let anyone know I lent him a mobile phone.
Okay, what on earth was that? Was that supposed to be some sort of accent?
It was an actual proper
Sheffield
accent, thank you very much.
Oh, okay. So, yes, this week we're going to be looking at Rosa, having just watched the Planet of Spiders Part 2.
Oh, now don't tease.
Yeah, Dad, gosh.
Don't tease. Ashley Hughes has just said hello, so hello, Ashley.
Hi.
It's rather spooky, that, because I've found lots of Ashley's wedding video on my computer today. It's strange that he was...
Last night I thought my recorder, my DVR, had misbehaved because the whole evening went by and I suddenly realized, wait a minute, what happened to the Doctor Who episode? And I looked at my DVR and there's nothing there. And then I said, oh, darn, I'm so in the habit of Doctor Who being on Saturday.
I know.
I actually quite like it being on Sunday because I wouldn't be able to watch if it was on a Saturday. And I'm able to watch it when it's on telly. It's really quite good and unusual for me. That's not happened since it came back, to actually regularly be able to watch it when it goes out on the telly.
Well, when we get it, it comes with commercials. So I like to record it so I can buzz through the commercials.
Anyway, so you're back, and it's the first time you've been back, Mary, since Island Con, and how jealous are you that your boyfriend cheated on you?
Well, I don't think he had. I mean, golly, he remembered me, or at least he remembered Chicago TARDIS.
Yes, I did rather forget to perhaps get a little message from him for you. I was so excited when I went over to him with my phone and showed him the picture of you and he, that he actually did remember where it was.
Uh-huh.
So...
That is pretty amazing.
And the bad news to Debbie, he completely forgot Debbie, even though he'd spoken to her not minutes before.
I don't mind.
The worst thing about it, of course, is that I got the opposite of a cuddle from him. He decided to do a back-to-back pose for the picture that I had with him. So it's almost like you can get much more opposite to a cuddle than a back-to-back pose, could you?
You got a hug from his back.
No.
Well, I mean, you guys, like I said, two are doing the cool man thing.
Yeah. No, I wanted a cuddle. Sorry, no, I wanted a cuddle. I didn't even get one. I got a sort of a shoulder across my shoulder in the two doctors picture, which is all right. And I got a cuddle from Sophie when I was a bit sweaty because I've been running around. And Debbie will verify this, that I actually was... Sophie's handler. That sounds a bit rude, actually. Sophie's handler for about 5 minutes.
Yes, he was. He was indeed.
So I looked after her and got her into a photo shoot 20 minutes late. Only did that, of course, because the photo shoot was actually supposed to be with me anyway. But anyway, let's talk Rosa. So, the good thing about this, we can actually get through this episode quite quickly for reasons that the listeners may find...
have already noticed.
So
Kirby's enjoying family time.
Yes, and I bet they're enjoying it as well. What the hell's going on with this thing? I'm just waiting for iPlayer to load up at the moment. My mouse has gone funny, so we'll just wait. Ah, here it's back again now.
Yeah, I still like the fact that they've harkened back to the original.
Howl
around.
We got sound
for the background and the.
I'm trying to find. How do you turn the volume down on this?
And the music too. You know that they've kind of
Oh, I found the volume button. Oh, it's not working.
She was singing along the top
there.
There
we go.
Like, no, she's enjoying it. Leave her alone.
Yeah.
Okay, right. So, Rosa begins with the title sequence. I do like the fact that we go straight into the title sequence, like it used to do in the olden days. No sort of lead-in clips or anything. I like that. Everybody probably else and that has followed New Who since it came back in 2005 probably doesn't, but I do. And it begins with a scene with a lady of Afro-Caribbean descent, or she does look a bit mixed race, actually, in this particular scene. And having seen pictures of the real Rosa Parks, a very accurate, you know, sort of makeup and stuff that this particular actress has had. Uh-oh. I didn't want to know that. That's mean. I wanted to watch it tomorrow.
No, I'm happy.
Sorry, there was a Crystal Come Dancing. What's it called again?
Strictly
Come Dancing reference interruption there from She Who Must Be Obeyed. The door's open now. She's going to moan about the door being open.
Because I love Joe Sugg.
Yeah, forget about Joe Sugg and let's get her back to Doctor Who. So, yes, this lady has got on a bus and has a bit of a confrontation with the bus driver because all the black passengers are standing up and she can't get back. She has to go to the back of the bus to get on because that's where all the black passengers get on, but can't get on because someone's standing in the, you know, in the doorwell, I suppose you'd call it. So he's very, very mean to her and kicks her off.
Ridiculous.
And doesn't let her back on again. So, anyway, then we jump forward a few years after that, and the TARDIS arrives. It's a very strange sort of a materialisation, sort of coming in, coming out, coming in, coming out, coming in, coming out, and then coming in again.
It does take a while to land, doesn't it, compared to the other ones? Yeah, definitely. But it does harken back to early Doctor Who, you know, like with the... Troughton's TARDIS took a while to come in.
It does indeed. And also, I do quite like the sort of almost like a glass effect it has when it's in mid sort of, what do you call it, materialisation. It sort of goes almost like a transparent thing. There was once a transparent TARDIS, wasn't there, with the Eccleston series where the TARDIS, you probably don't remember that. You two are probably a bit too young to remember the Eccleston. Anyway. That's what Kirby says. Anyway, so like I say, we jump back in time and the TARDIS crew, the Doctor's trying to get them back to Sheffield and opens the door up and said, well, not quite Sheffield then. And then when she says where they are, that obviously everybody's quite excited about the prospect of one being back in time and two being in the United States. So they go outside and Ryan very gallantly picks up a white glove from a lady who dropped it and then gets a punch in the face from her husband.
No, it's a slap.
Oh, like a punch to me.
It's a slap.
Yeah, it's a slap.
Somebody's going to get a point deducted. If I keep on getting bings in my pocket...
Sorry.
Debbie Melrose. Right.
I'm showing you why there's a lot of popping and cracking before you tell me off that my link up is wrong. I have a fire with a very, very poppy wood going on it. So
Isabella, can you hear any popping and cracking?
No.
There we go. So a warranted point either. Deducted there. And I'm just going to open up my scorecard to get to...
thanks. Natural fuel.
You're just showing off. Just showing off that she's got a
long-type
fire. Apologise, or else you get a point deducted.
He's got even worse in the past.
I have not got even worse.
Yes, he has.
I gave you 10 points. No, you got second. Them back again. Thank you very much. I'm just waiting for my scorecard to open up so I can implement that particular score adjustment, and it's taken ages. I've had to do updates on my Macintosh because the mouse has gone all over the place, and the high-tech people at Apple said that it needed an update, so it did several updates, and now I've got a new system. I think after all everything was reinstalled and everything, and all the systems updated, I think I've managed to work out that actually it's the mouse that's not the problem, not the computer. Because even when the mouse freezes, everything else doesn't. So I would have thought if the computer's freezing, then it freezes. It doesn't just isolate the freezing of the mouse. But they weren't able to work that out at Apple. Bless them. All right, I'm just opening up this file, and now it's asking for Microsoft updates, which I'll ignore. This is really high-tech and, interesting podcasting, isn't it? But what are you looking at?
Something.
Oh, I'm opening up the wrong file. That's called Weddings Latest. That won't be much good to a Doctor Who podcast, will it?
Right.
Can't believe how long this is taking. Stop fiddling. Put that pen down. What are you doing?
I'm getting a pen. I'm sorting something.
She's adjusting some of her notes, everybody. So, eventually my page will open up. Here it is, right, and I can make some changes in a minute. So, remind me, 1 point off Debbie when I get a chance to implement that later. Back to the story, right. Yeah, so, I thought he got a punch in the face. He gets a slap in the face from a very mean and horrible man. And then this lady comes up who is a woman on the bus who hasn't aged one bit considering this is 12 years later. And she basically cools the situation down, which, bearing in mind the racial attitude of this man, I don't think that would have happened unless he knew that she was a high-standing person in her community, etc. However, this is what happens. She diffuses the situation. Ryan's not very happy, though.
No, she just changes the subject.
Yeah, but she very skillfully diffused the situation.
Yes.
And then, of course, at that point, they'll find out that's Rosa Parks. Now, before we talk on the subject of Rosa Parks, I would like to apologise to the world. Now, I'm quite an educated person. I know I'm quite interested in world history, stuff like that. And I had never heard of Rosa Parks.
What?
Jack's
going to ask that question, because they all seem to know everything about her, even more than I knew about her.
We did American history. We did more American history, modern history, than we, you know, the Mississippi burning, things like that.
We knew more of that
in high school. We did of our own history.
But one of my favourite subjects is Roots by Alex Haley.
American history at our school more than anything. Excuse me. It was so utterly fascinating. We did everything from
lucky old you.
Civil War onwards.
Well, I watched Roots and Roots the Next Generation, a fascinating story, and my mum obviously told me about the novel by Alex Haley, and
Hunter Kinty.
Now, all that stuff was covered in Roots, but I don't remember any mention of Rosa Parks, and there was also the subject was touched in the film Forrest Gump, and if it was mentioned, it never sunk in. Because Forrest Gump seemed to cover little bits of history change and how he was involved in it as well. So somewhere along the line, Rosa Parks went off the radar. And I'm a bit frustrated, annoyed about this, because obviously she is a very, very important person in history. I'm just frustrated and annoyed that I'd never heard of her.
Unless the schools changed their curriculums to highlight it more.
Yes. Maybe they did.
Later, you know.
Maybe they did.
After you were there.
I can't believe you've heard of Rosa Parks. Isabella?
Yeah, because in year 7 we are learning about like inspirational people.
Okay. Well, I'm pleased you knew.
Over the years, they've come up with these, at least here in the States, February is always Black History Month. So all of these personages of fame that are black all get highlighted every February.
That's great.
Well, the other thing that fascinated me, and it's quite sad that we haven't got anybody from Alabama on the show today, was how much the attitude of Alabamans, is that the correct word? Alabamanians, or people from Alabama, has changed in only half a century. Because obviously some states in southern USA are still a bit on the racist side, shall we say? Is that putting it mildly? I think it probably is. Are Alabamanians? Alabamanas? Are they proud of Rosa Parks and the states and the cities sort of, part in the history of turning America into a better country? No? Okay, fine, I'll move on then. All right, then.
I don't know anybody, but Kirby and Matthew, and I don't think either
one of
them. Yeah,
they're not from Montgomery, but
the
fact that they live or reside in Alabama at some point in their lives, I would just wonder if they've been to Montgomery. And
it's not just Alabama; it was also Mississippi and Georgia, Florida.
They had the apartheid. It's apartheid, isn't it? This segregation thing. But I know there was also something that went online. Talking about there was a rip-off of an episode of Quantum Leap. How can a factual part of history be a rip-off of another program that was a time travel show?
I just think that they took advantage of the same historical time can think of.
How many times have certain historical events been depicted in various different...
Look at the books and things about Anne Boleyn and Henry VIII.
Yeah.
if everybody that was depicted in all the stories was actually there when she got beheaded and something happened, they'd be millions. You
know? And besides, the Quantum Leap episode I remember that they were probably referring to was, what is it? It wasn't even Rosa Parks. It was just a situation where somebody went into a, I think it was a cafe, to get a drink for their boss, which was like an old black man, went into a cafe to get a drink for his boss. He used to drive around for her, and of course they glared at him and said, "Well, not serving you." And she said, "Well, I'm just getting a drink from a boss," and that's how the story generated from there. I don't think it was actually Rosa Parks. It was just another incident of racial. You know,
it was all the small incidents that built up to this one incident that triggered, has been sort of focused as triggering the whole explosion of human rights, basically. And but this was the one thing that stood out. But it's lots of small things, a small trickle that just became just a torrent.
So I'll talk about how they dealt with Rosa Parks's subsequent life in this episode later on. So we'll carry on with the story. So, sorry to interrupt you there, Debbie.
That's okay. No.
So then we meet Fonz with a beard. needs a bit of a shave.
He's a very odd baddie because hopefully they'll explain a bit more about him in later stories.
He's going to be back in there.
He looks a bit like Danny from Grease.
That's what I just said. Yeah. Oh, no, I said Fonz, a similar sort of character. Obviously, we know he's going to be back because he's just got dumped somewhere in history, so there will be a return somewhere along the line. But, he comes in, he knows what the TARDIS is, and we know, obviously, there's the talk of the Archeron energy. That's why the Doctor's hanging around, because Archeron energy shouldn't be in 1950, whatever it is.
1955.
Yeah. And then we see a strange man with some futuristic equipment. Immediately twigged it was one of Captain Jack's sidekicks. Excuse me. Anyway, so the Doctor, specifically Ryan, keeps on getting himself into some awkward situations. The next is where they're sat in a bar or a cafe, and this really cute.
It's like a bar, isn't it? Yeah,
it's a bar.
This really cute girl sort of kicks him out. Basically, I love the way she talks, and the voice she used for it was quite cute. And they have to leave the cafe, but they're sort of putting together a plan to find out what's going on. They end up in this sort of like a warehouse, and the Doctor uses her magic wand. I mean, sonic screwdriver to make this suitcase suitcase appear. Inside the suitcase is all lots of futuristic gadgets, and she then has a confrontation with this chap. What was his name?
Crasco.
A typical Doctor meeting villain of story scene. And, of course, she's already got hold of half his kit. It's the power supply for his time-travelling doodah. And is this a point in which she realises that he can't, because he's out of the storm cage and he can't actually attack anyone. So she, by actually getting him to attacker, I think it was on there. No, okay.
Wasn't me.
No, it's just a notification. We'll have a look at that one. No, it's nothing interesting.
It's Twitter.
No, it's nothing. Nothing interesting. Somebody just following me on Twitter. Hang on, my thing's just dropped. What's gone up there? Right then. So where do we go? Oh yeah, and then so they go on a mission, and they go into this motel. And then a policeman turns up, and of course they have to hide a couple of people. Of course, it makes me laugh that they mistake Yaz as being Mexican. I thought that was quite a clever clever thing. It does rather imply that Indian or Pakistani people didn't exist in the 1950s. But
and the thing is even the writers don't really know what to do with Yaz, because as dark-skinned as she is, I think that she would have been thought of as being black or even partially black.
Mm, quite possibly.
Exactly. Because she's so dark.
Yeah.
In the front of the bus and everything, so it's like, I'm not sure they even knew what to do with her.
Yeah, but they did bring that into the story, because she didn't know where she was supposed to go, did she? And she thought that she should have been perhaps considered to be black, didn't she?
Right, right. But she sat in the front of the bus and the driver didn't say anything.
But she was expecting or half expecting to be kicked to the back, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so this policeman turns up and sort of stuff goes off. I'm just trying to work on moving forward a bit. Right. So then, of course, they I forgot to mention about they look in the newspaper and see what date it is. So the doctor knows that that this chap Krasko is trying to change history. So they have to then make sure that Rosa does her protest on the bus things. And so this is where the story starts kicking in, that they've got to try and protect history. And also it's quite clever because obviously I love the bit where Ryan follows Rosa home and ends up
they'd be better than that without a British accent.
They find out earlier that that she was sort of friends with Martin Luther King and stuff. So when he goes into the house and meets him, it's quite a delightful scene.
Yeah, my nan loves you.
Yeah. And then that's after then that we have the scene where the doctor provokes Krasko into attacking her and then stamps on the vortex manipulator. And for some reason, didn't she give Ryan the weapon that will blast anything back into time?
Yes.
Yes.
She didn't give it to him. She just threw it on the bed in the motel.
And he picked it up. Yeah. Yeah.
But she shows him how to use it when he asks her.
Yeah. So you see, like I say, Ryan goes into the house and meets Rosa's husband, who looks white.
He does.
And Martin Luther King. And as I say, I quite enjoyed that scene. And then Graham makes friends with all the bus drivers, which is quite clever, considering his sort of link with bus drivers we saw in episode one.
Yeah. And his best mate is Jim Boy.
But while he's trying to make friends with one bus driver, Krasko manipulates the situation so as the wrong bus driver gets rostered into doing the particular bus run that they need that bus driver to do. So the doctor sort of helps the wrong bus drivers, is getting confusing, to win a competition to dispatch them on holiday. And then, of course... the funny scene where Graham and
Ryan
go and meet and him by the creek while he's doing fishing, and of course they provoke him into going back to work, and then of course Krasko
destroyed
the bus. So Doctor rips her coat so as it forces Rosa into staying behind to fix the coat so she can leave to catch the correct bus. And then are you keeping up with this? No?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
So they nick Graham nicks a bus. Krasko then changes or puts signs on all the bus stops to say that all the buses have stopped. And then Rosa nearly takes too long to fix the doctor's coat. And then Ryan chases up after a couple of white people and said, "No, you can't. The bus is running. And nearly gets another punch in the face.
By an old man.
Yeah.
With a good mustache.
"Don't you tell me what to do, boy." And then Ryan has a confrontation with Krasko and blasts him somewhere into history so as we can bring him back later on in the series.
Now, did Krasko knew he was going to do that?
I don't know. Why would you think he did?
Because it was obvious. Like, it was pretty obvious. Like, if you were about to be blasted into another dimension, you'd be like, "Oh God, no!" Him just. Okay.
I think he accepted that he was gonna.
He accepted his fate.
Yeah. I kind of think he accepted it because he was kind of a useless character, really.
And also, he wasn't going to die, was he? He was just going to end. It was a bit like that scenario with that series. What was it called again? Primeval, when they had that. What they used to call it in private, that thing they used to step through time in, anomaly, wasn't it, where they just go through it knowing they probably get back at some point.
It's going to end up somewhere without any of his tools.
Yes. So on the bus we then have the scene where Rosa comes on, and of course they realise that they're in the middle of it. They have to take up the seat, so Rosa's stuck in the situation that causes the whole thing to kick off. And that's what happens. Like, they manage to get it to change history. She gets arrested, and a song plays, and
it's a good song,
and then they end up back in the TARDIS. And now the fact the Doctor's telling them the rest of Rosa Parks' life and showing us that, and we have clips on the TARDIS monitor of what actually happened, that reminded me of where Doctor Who began, the educational side, because when it's first series of Doctor Who, when it was historical, which essentially this is, was all about educating children of important events in history. And I quite liked the fact that they did that, because I actually was really interested. I know I could go on to Google and read up about what happened to Rosa Parks subsequently, but it was nice to see that little video clip of her getting the award from Clinton. And yeah, it was quite a delightful way to end it and do a little scene of education and the asteroid called Rosa Parks, etc.
Sorry, Adam, can I just interrupt and tell you to take a point off of Kirby next week?
Why? What's he done now?
And Mary's just dinged as well.
Right, points deducted, point deducted for Mary. But I'll have to remind me, point deducted for Mary, point deducted for Debbie, and one off Kirby next week.
Okay, so...
Okay, yeah. So...
Or you could just turn your notifications to silent.
Oh, for goodness sake. I do have to... I have a business to run here. I do have to have my dings on.
But you're always on at us for not being making noise.
No, it's you making the noise. You know my phone's on not on silent. Anyway, moving on. So, yeah, so we see the scene, we see the asteroid, and then the episode is played out with a bit of music. So, Rosa... I think it's generally been touted around the world of Doctor Who that it's a very, very good story, and I have to concede that it is indeed a very, very good story. It's certainly different in regards to certain things that Doctor Who's doing within certainly the ending, at least, and the fact that we haven't really had a proper historical since the classic era. So it was nice to have a good historical. That it was shot beautifully, acted amazingly, and out of all the episodes we've had so far, I've enjoyed watching this a second time more than the other ones. And I say Jodie goes from strength to strength as the Doctor, and I'm actually starting to like Yaz and Ryan now, as I already did like Graham. I think obviously the episode we saw tonight, I thought Bradley Walsh was absolutely amazing in that episode. Along with the rest of them, but he shone through, as I said he would. He's an amazing performer, actor, whatever he does, he's just really, really good at. So I was quite proud of Bradley Walsh for his performance in tonight's episode, and he was bloody good in this too. So Rosa is fantastic. I can't really say it isn't. I know other people, there was some on the forums saying wasn't that good, but most people I've spoken to have said it is outstanding television. Alone Doctor Who, it's outstanding television, and I hope it wins awards. It probably won't, because people don't seem to like Doctor Who. But I will say what people are saying on other programmes that are on television at the moment, that Doctor Who is amazing at the moment, which is quite makes me quite proud to be a Doctor Who fan. This one sat to my right was just about to hear her views on the episode. Might disagree because she doesn't really like Doctor Who that much.
That is offensive.
But she is here, and she wants to be here to review Rosa.
Well, I absolutely loved the episode. I loved the concept of it. It was just so good.
Was it?
Yeah, it's one of the best episodes I've watched in a while.
So how many episodes have you watched of Doctor Who? None! So there we go.
That is offensive. I thought the casting was really good.
What, you mean Jodie Whittaker?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean the casting for the
American
Rosa. Yes. Really good. Just loved it.
Okay.
I also agree with you with the history part.
You do? You like that bit, did you?
Yeah, I love that bit. Anyway.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. Debbie, what did you think?
This is the first Doctor Who in a long time that had all three of us cheering by the end of it.
What do you mean all three? How did you hear me cheer?
With Tom. So I've asked Tom to feedback, but he hasn't, so sorry.
Okay.
But, to have shared this with Isla was an absolute treat, because she's just finished in the last term at her school. She did a huge, the whole school did a project on apartheid.
So this really did just speak to her on so many different levels. She's adoring Jodie Whittaker. I think Jodie Whittaker is just going to be her doctor,
yeah,
really, because she loves her. She wants to cosplay as her next Comic-Con, you know.
Well, she's not allowed.
Absolutely, absolutely immersed in it. She wants to know more about it. She wants to hear some of the CDs I've got. So we've got a budding Whovian now, so I'm quite happy. I did find you could always tell when the writer changed. Because Mallory Blackman, she kept the story going. The story was really just going. The facts were there. The characters were rounded. But I found Crasco, he was almost like, he was just a generic villain. And so he didn't really make an impact. You know, I know he was making an impact on the show. You know, he was making them do everything to get to that point, but it could have been anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I wasn't sure about. And then when they were doing that whole Scooby-Doo bit with the writing on the bedroom wall and things, that was obviously Chibnall.
Yeah.
And you could see the switch. You could see the scene switches, and you could also see where Mallory was just given the chance just to write, and it was beautiful, and it was zappy, it was going, it was on, and you were being alternately shocked and also alternately laughing. And sometimes you just didn't know where to place yourself, because it was an uncomfortable episode. It had to be an uncomfortable episode, but it was so wonderful to have a historical episode after enjoying all of the early Doctor Who's with all the historical characters, you know, Nero and things like that. Just to have enjoyed that so much and to have this harken back to it and Isla going, but where's the aliens? It's like, well, no, the Doctor is the alien,
yeah,
in that world, and that was what it started out as. So it got us talking about early Who, and it's open conversations on forums with people who've not even touched classic Who. So this episode was a triumph to bring Who to new people, and to also for people who gave up on it with the new Doctor turn up, especially, you know, the Matt Smith, David Tennant era, and when Clara became the Clara show, we lost a lot of viewers. This will probably bring a lot of people back.
Yeah.
But I thought this was a stunning episode. I was cheering. I was almost in bits at the end. And the last Doctor Who episode I was in bits for was Twice Time. You know, what's the one, the Christmas special with Peter Capaldi?
Yes.
Quite, yeah, the two Doctors, you know, yes. That bit. I was crying in that because of the World War and things like that. And I'm not normally emotional, but this really did just speak to my gut, and I really did enjoy it. And having learnt so much about it at school, it brought everything back. And I've actually reread some books that I've had stashed in, you know, in boxes for years from my schooling, that all about segregation and white supremacy and things. And I just... Yeah, it was absolutely brilliant, and I think it's one of the best episodes of New Who ever.
Yeah, so I quite like the fact that that you managed to get through this particular subject matter without using the N-word as well. Because I'm pretty sure at the time the N-word would have actually been used, but it wasn't needed because...
It's just a reflection of, yeah, today's PC morals and attitudes. Mm. Yes, but I do understand what you mean, but it would have been, yeah, so wrong for Doctor Who.
I agree. And also, the N-word is now considered to be up there among the words you're not allowed to say after 9 o'clock, you know, so it's just as well. And you don't need to say it. It was the fact that finally a programme that's on, you know, in this day and age is allowed to even talk about or brace this particular matter, which in some ways in
it's
recent
very relevant
times,
to today, yeah, as well, in the way things are going, yeah, especially in this country.
But not necessarily for black people but for Muslim people.
Speaking their home language,
yeah,
on our tube trains. It's unreal, you know, why?
Yeah.
And the attitudes of the characters were ugly enough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You need, exactly, the addition of the N-word, you know, to...
Yeah, no, exactly. But, I mean, it was nice that...
It probably would have turned off.
They just were able to use storytelling and drama to,
mm-hmm,
to take it, mm-hmm, through, and it was beautiful.
And they did it perfectly. That was a brilliant, brilliant way. They've handled it gently, considerately, but with enough shock value for people like my daughter to go, wow.
Yeah, I'm hoping this is going to be Jodie's blink.
Yes.
So there you go. That was Debbie Melrose, and now I don't know why I'm bothering to play this because I don't think it's actually worth it. I'm preparing another little button. Mary.
for the most part, I agree with everything that Deb had to say, including and especially about the Carrasco character. Yeah. He just felt so, you know, like just whoever, just something inserted there for this. He didn't have much of a personality or anything that you could get a hold of and say, oh, you know.
You normally get a bit of backstory just to
see. Yeah, you don't get anything really except the storm cage thing that the doctor refers to. And just to jump in here, you said that the doctor hasn't done historical since the classics age.
No, I know we've done. Yeah, there's me cosplaying as a blooming clockwork droid.
That's not really that
historical.
No, I didn't feel that was historical.
I think more notable historical. I think actually just being totally immersed.
This was about a specific moment in time that's historical, and that's why I call this an historical, not a dabbling in moments in time, which is what certain episodes of Doctor Who have done in the time.
The Doctor did have an influence on events in that other story, even though he came in and out of the events.
Yeah, but wasn't direct, was it? This was a direct, you know.
Yeah.
Impartation.
You did answer my question about, you know, how much the Brits know about the Rosa Parks story. Okay, and I want to say that the story did. It totally grabbed me. It made me really uncomfortable. Mm. And what I loved about it was the use of the music of the time to set the scene.
Yeah.
Each time, you know, the 1940 whatever time, and then the 1955 time, you know, they used the music to help you get a feel for the era, as well as amazing, you know, costume settings. The accents were good, you know, so I was totally immersed. Then, just as I started to get chills of, okay, this is going to happen, this is really going to happen, Rosa Parks is going to do what she's going to do, they break in with music that is so out of the period, so modern. That it just totally jarred me. It took me out of the story completely. And all I could think of is, whoa, there is so much amazing civil rights era music that they could have used that would have just taken me in, like, over the top how I felt. But instead, they chose to use what, for me, you know, what was just totally jarring and unrelated music. So I hated that. I wish that they would redo the whole thing. And put some of the amazing and uplifting music of the civil rights time in there. What I worry about, though, is I think they were being PC about it, because so much of that civil rights music that they would link arms and sing whenever they would march down main streets or over bridges or do any of these historical things were based on Negro spirituals. So I have a feeling, you know, that all this music has words like Jesus in them. And I think that the producers may have recoiled from doing anything so obviously Christian, though the whole basis for the movement was very Christian. I mean, the Reverend Martin Luther King in the Southern Baptist Church, you know, that was the core of everything. So I felt like they, at the very end, kind of jerked the story out of its time and place by putting that music in there. So that's my biggest complaint. And one other comment that I'd like to make is something that you got out of Sylvester in your interview with him, Adam, is that when you asked him about the new Dr. Jodi, and I so agreed with him, he says, well, you know, about her being a woman. And he said, well, she's not really a woman. She's more like a little boy. And I have to totally agree with that. She's got that energy, that youthfulness, that not quite womanness. She is. She's like an adolescent boy.
Yeah.
So I think that's how they're dealing with this fear on everyone's part that, oh, my God, a woman as a doctor. She's not really a full woman. She is this other thing. And I'm not – it's not a complaint. Like it. But I think it's just the way they handled using a woman.
This is a lot of, I mean,
really working though, isn't it?
It's working, and the young, and it's like taking the young back when they were so hooked on the Matt Smith era. She's like another Matt Smith.
I've got a lot of tenon out of her, especially out of this, the episode that was on tonight. There was a lot of the early Tennant.
She did channel Tennant quite heavily in this last episode, yes.
But, I mean, Sylvester also commented on that, that she's like a Matt Smith. So I'm thinking...
I'm not denying that, but I do get a lot of Tennant.
She reminds me of Matt Smith more than Tennant, but this last episode she definitely was sort of embracing the Tennant era. Yeah,
so, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
So that's me.
Thank you.
Oh, great.
Yes, right. So let's see what they're saying on the feed.
Did Kirby send any feedback?
Probably not, no. He moans about other people for not sending it in. And then we got Laurie Nick said, hi all. And then Joshua Dybald said, spider, 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 spider. And then posted some spider's webs to go on. Laurie Nick said, cool man thing is code. Angie Butcher joined. And then Laurie Nick said, oh, some emojis. We'll move on for that. Dean Hill joined. And then Alan Daisley said, Rosa rocks every evening gang. So that means that Rosa rocks the evening gang. I don't know if that's some sort of... are you hot?
Yes.
Alexa, front room fire off. Okay. There we go. And then Kirby Bartlett Sloan said, hi from intermission at the silent movie I'm attending. Laurie Nick said, hi, Kirby. And then Joshua Dybald says, they've done historicals for a while, but they haven't been so educational and they've been corny on the whole.
I think that's basically what I was really going for, is the education aspect.
Yeah, I loved it. I know they don't do that all the time, but I did love it on this particular instance. It was so beautiful. A beautiful episode. Laurie Nick said, female can't be solely defined by traditional stereotypes. And then... Alan Daisley said, not too keen on that song. It might grow on me, might not. No point moaning about it. Now I think the reason they chose that song, one, so I wondered, obviously somebody in the production team liked it, and two, that it was actually irrelevant to the, you know, the what was going on. Yeah, so what was going on. I think the song was sounded like it was actually written about it, about a similar situation. I think that's why. And like Mary says, I think perhaps the songs that were out at the time were all sort of religiously sort of songs, and this was specifically about a person in the same sort of inspirational situation that Rosa Parks ended up in. So thank you, everybody, for your comments. I've got a person who's got school tomorrow, so therefore it's time for this week's edition. If you won't get to this one... Right then, Mary, who do you think's going to win?
Huh. Well, I got schooled last week, so I'm going to pick Isabella.
Yeah, right then. Debbie, who do you think's going to win?
Isabella.
You take notes.
Isabella, who do you think's going to win?
Does it sound weird if I pick myself?
No.
Okay.
Probably quite logical in some way. Mary, who do you think's going to be last?
Me.
Debbie, who do you think is going to be last?
Toss up between Mary or me. I'm going to go for Mary.
It's and a safer bet.
Isabella, who do you think is going to be last?
I feel bad. Well, I'm going to choose. I always choose myself.
You can't pick yourself. Who's going to be last?
Winner and loser.
Waiting.
I pick me, for God's sake.
I choose Mary. I'm sorry.
That rather means that the bet is completely null and void, because so it won't have any bearing on whoever actually does win. So we'll carry on anyway. Right, everybody has a joker. The current scores are in last place with minus 1 point is Mary and Debbie, and in the lead with no points, it's Isabella. First question goes to Mary. What year did the story begin?
Oh, I'll play the joker.
No.
Yes.
1943.
Hooray! Woo-hoo!
Yeah, stop it, Isabella. And that goes to that. Okay, Debbie.
Yes.
Why did Rosa think there was no point getting off the bus?
Joker, there's people standing in the stairwell.
That was a bit too blimmin' easy.
Nice. Both of us got a joker.
Think how I'm going to get this back on my side. Right then.
I'm not
London.
Isabella.
Hi.
How many attempts has the Doctor tried to get to Sheffield?
Hello.
Did she say? Yeah.
Yes, she did.
Yeah. 12? I didn't think she said.
Yeah, well, she did.
It's 14th.
Oh, I missed the bell. I'll try
it
again.
The doctor says not. It's the companion that says 14th.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Graham who said, admitted it was actually.
It's ninth attempt, and Graham goes 14.
Yeah, right, there's 1 point in the bonus pot for this question. What was the name of the man with the clumsy glove woman?
I know.
Go on, Em.
We didn't say his name. It's Mr. Steele.
They did say his name.
That otherwise, his name.
Well, that's not his name.
Well, it is. That's because, oh, never mind. It was his name. It's not. She went, because Rosa comes up and said, called him Mr. Steele.
Yeah, Mr. Steele. That's not his name. It doesn't say his name. It's his surname.
That's his name, then.
That's not his name.
Well, I'm not going to argue with you, but I am right.
Well,
right, then.
I'm going to argue with you.
Okay, point deducted.
No!
What?
If you don't know Isabella, is back in 1955, nobody was referred to by their first name.
Not at all.
It was always good manners to refer to people by their surname.
Mr. Whoever. You didn't get a point, Doctor, so you can stop sulking.
Miss Melrose.
Mm-hmm.
Right then. So, back to Mary.
Yes.
Whose body was found in the river?
I know.
Emmett Till.
You should look up about that. We learnt about him as well.
Yeah.
Okay, right then, Debbie.
Yes.
Which classes were named after inspirational people?
I know.
Three, four, and five?
Oh, no, hit the wrong button then. It's this one. And there's a relevant no after saying I knew. Go on, Imp.
It's 4, 5, and 6.
Oh.
4, 5, 6 was, of course, a monster and got 2, I seem to remember. Here's the correct answer. Right then. So, next question goes to Isabella.
Hi.
Why do I have no joke? Because I accidentally deleted it.
That's rude.
Sorry. All right. Are you ready?
No.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, are you ready now?
I'm joking.
What was the date on the newspaper?
I know.
Wait.
All right.
Wait.
Okay.
Wait, I'm trying to find it.
You've got 30 seconds.
Wasn't
25.
It the 31st of... Wait. No. It was the 30th of November.
Yeah.
1955.
Yay!
Got there in the end.
Did you play the Joker?
No, you didn't play a Joker, but you probably did. Should just well, you didn't. The way you stumbled through the answer.
No, because I didn't have it written down. I was trying to remember.
Okay, there's 1 point in the bonus pot.
Okay.
Who does Graham need? Sorry, start that again. What does Graham need? He moaned. He said he needed something specific. What was it?
Give it a try.
Yes.
He wanted food. He was starving.
Yeah, something to eat.
Which
keeps going off, and we need
the
to eat.
Oh, yeah.
Right, okay, let's have a score update. In last place, with 4 points each, it's Debbie and Izzy, and in the lead with 6 points, it's Mary.
Yeah, Mary.
Mary's question. Why couldn't they see the suitcase?
Oh, because it had a perception filter around it.
I do love these little references we're having recently for sort of minimal Doctor Who recent history. That being one of them, of course. Debbie.
Yes.
When was the last time Yaz climbed through a window?
I know.
Oh, God. Oh, year 10?
Well, what we're going to do with that, we're going to give half a, well, 1 point for that. It's not entirely right. I'd like the full answer if possible.
Was year 10.
Yes, but that's not the full answer that I'm looking for. There's a bit more.
Danny
detail.
Something.
Danny Biswas.
Okay.
Point for Isabella. So she gets the other point for
you
that.
You said
one.
When?
Yes.
Yeah, you said when.
Well, that's how she described it as when. She said year 10 Danny Biswas. That's how she described it in the script.
So year 10 sneaked into Danny Biswas's room.
She just, oh, shut up. Anyway, you get on the point, so shut up, although I'll take
okay,
them back
I'm
off
sorry.
Again. Right then. Next question goes to Isabella.
Hi.
Which artist might the Doctor be?
Ooh, I know.
Shut up, Hamish.
Yes, you should, but you didn't, so there you go. No points in the bonus pot. There we go. Back to Mary. What job did Rosa have?
She was a seamstress.
Yeah.
Couldn't get more, much more accurate
that
than that. Debbie Melrose.
Yes.
What was the name of the suspicious policeman?
I know.
Mason?
It's getting very frustrating, this. I'm not supposed to get these questions right. Izzy.
Sorry.
Izzy.
Hi.
What name did Graham give to the cop?
Joker. Steve Jobs.
Very good.
Okay, no points in the bonus spot. Current scores are in last place with 7 points, Debbie. In second place with 10 points, Mary. In the lead with 11 points, Isabella. It's Mary's question. What was the name of the driver who refused Rosa?
I know.
James Blake.
This is very frustrating. Debbie.
Yeah?
Where did Rosa work?
Montgomery Department Store. Montgomery Fair Department Store.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. That was my bell's a bit damp there, but there you go. Yes, yeah. It's the correct answer. Isabella.
Hi.
What did the Doctor tell Rosa that their task was?
What?
The Doctor said they had a task. What did she... tell Rosa that their task
oh,
was...
Oh, raffle.
Yeah.
Wait, what? I'm so
wait,
confused.
What? What do you mean, wait, what? Anybody else?
No.
Yeah, I'm confused. What?
Was it, transport habits?
Oh.
Well done, Dad.
My live video just ended.
You nailed it.
Right, let's do a restart it.
Here.
I don't know why this keeps doing this. It's becoming a bit rubbish, you know, this...
Yeah, it has done it several times now, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did it last week.
I'm not impressed. Stupid thing. Right, back to where I was. Got slightly... Where did we get up to? I was asking the question. Right, and you both got it wrong.
You said what was the question. I said transport habits. What was the answer?
The answer was market research for bus companies.
Yes.
All right, there's 2 points in the... Hang on, whose question was that for?
Me.
Yes, I got interrupted by my Facebook feed coming to an end. So, 2 points in the bonus spot.
Yeah.
What did Rosa ask Ryan if he was any good at?
I know.
Go on then, Debbie.
Making coffee.
Nah.
The correct answer. Right, so back to Mary. Mm-hmm. Two people have joined us, which is good. So some people have realised we've moved over. I'll have to tell people at the start of the episodes now that the live feed may come to an end. Right then, Mary, it is this question. What century was Krasko's weapon sent to?
79th century.
Debbie, what church was Martin Luther King from?
Whose question is that, sorry?
Yours, dear.
I should know this. Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. I should know that better than that.
You should know it better than that. Well, that was the answer. I don't know what you mean.
Oh, I passed my history exam because of that.
Did you? Mm-hmm. Don't get any extra points for that. Okay, right then. Izzy.
Hi.
Where is Jim going fishing?
Wait. I'm going to find it.
I hope so.
I'm trying to find it.
Debbie knows.
I had this written down.
I know, you've got a great big notebook full of them.
See, that's why I stopped doing big notes.
You have to spend all your time searching the notes.
Right. Oh, Mill Creek.
Well done.
I couldn't find it.
The suspense in that countdown music is rather good, isn't it? But you got there in the end. It was indeed Mill Creek, and the scores are in last place with 13 points each. It's Debbie and Izzy. And then the lead with 14 points. It's Mary. Whose question it is? Mary, who ended up with Jim's roster? So who ended up with the rostered shift that Jim was supposed to have? Mary, this is for.
Elias Griffin Jr.
Spot on. Debbie.
Yeah.
Elias won all expenses trip to where?
I know.
Frank Sinatra at Vegas.
Somebody's getting very frustrated here. Isabella.
Yeah.
What time did Rosa need to be out of work by?
5:40.
We're just jumping on these, aren't
we? Yes, you are. That's what she said. Right, so not many questions left, by the way. What are you looking at me like that for? Okay. Last place, 15 points each. Debbie and Izzy, and then the lead with 16 points. Mary, it's Mary's question. How long was Jim behind schedule when he got the bus?
I know.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, the delight in Isabella's voice when she realises she knows the answer is...
18 minutes.
Oh, I wouldn't know that one.
Right, Debbie.
Yes.
What shop were they supposed to get off... Sorry, what stop, I should say. What stop were they supposed to get off at?
Oh, I know.
I don't know that one. Off
nearly
top
started
my
playing the countdown music.
Oh, I think I know.
No, I know. I know.
On. Mary knows. Okay,
yeah,
go on, Mary.
It. Go ahead. Sorry.
I said the Empire Theatre.
Yes.
Yeah.
Get it. Right then. So that was Debbie's question, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Right. So this is Isabella's question.
Oh, it was me. Okay.
Yes. What was the song played at the end of the story?
Rise Up by Andra Day.
Well done. Very Thank impressive. You. 2 points in the bonus pot.
Okay.
One of them can be earned for this question.
Okay.
Are we ready?
Yes.
What date was bus segregation ended?
I know.
I think I know.
Go on, Em.
Oh, wait a minute.
Hang on. Mary said she knows. Sorry, I forgot it was a bonus pot question. It's a bonus pot question.
Mary said.
Go on in, Mary.
The 21st of December, 1956.
My birthday, that. 21st.
Yes, Mary did say I know first. I do apologise, Isabella, but yes, she did say it first. She hates me. So the current scores are... In last place with 15 points, Debbie. In second place with 18 points, it's Izzy. In the lead with 19 points, is Mary.
Whenever I sink to the lowest, I rise to the top.
Yes.
Two questions left, and they're both free-for-all questions, so please listen carefully. Somebody's under a lot of pressure to my right-hand side, because she spent a lot of time compiling her answers. So, this is number one. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Tough. Which president gave Rosa the Congressional Medal? Sorry, hang on. I've got the year down here. Okay, which president was it then, Isabella?
President Clinton.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you what I had written down.
What
the hell's the matter with me? I really don't know.
I'll tell you later.
Yes.
You had the year down.
Yes, I had the year down. I'm not going to ask that question. What's the matter with me? That was a correct answer. Right, there's one more question left. A free-for-all question once again.
Okay.
What asteroid was also known as Rosa Parks?
I know.
Your name?
284996.
After all the pressure that was in there, pulled it through at the end, and I think she thought she was going to lose.
So did I. Yeah.
I'm not going to do the toting up of the doubling up of points, because it's pointless.
tell us.
Oh, go on, and I'll do it just for fun, shall I? Right. Mary predicted Izzy to win.
Hi.
Okay, so that goes to that. Great. And then she predicted Mary to be at the bottom, which goes to that. Okay, then Debbie predicted Izzy to win, goes to that. And Mary's at the bottom, goes to that. And then that goes, becomes that, right. Oh, was that a three? Yes. Right, and then Izzy predicted Izzy to win. And Mary to be at the bottom, which means, that, like I said, it doesn't change anything at all, just the amount of points at the end of the game. So in last place with 30 points, Debbie. In second place with 38 points, Mary. Winner this week with 44 points, Isabella.
Hey,
all right,
Isabella. 3 times in a row now.
Smarty pants.
Miss only just smarty pants. So at that point, we say goodbye to Miss Isabella Pearson, who's now going to go to bed because it's school tomorrow.
Bye.
Bye, Izzy.
Mudgeit. Good night. Shut the door behind you. Thank you very much. Right then, now we can go back to the old video feed that died a death. See what people were saying. If anybody said anything at all, of course. All right, what we got? Well, hang on. Didn't seem to be updating at all. I got Alan T. Butcher says the song is an unofficial anthem of the Black Lives Matter movement and was certainly deliberately picked to draw a contemporaneous connection to the very major point that struggle continues. I think it was a beautiful song. It moved me a little bit, actually, when that song was playing into the titles, because it's very unusual, a song that isn't the theme tune of Doctor Who plays into the titles. And I think added to the impact and the emotion of the story and the achievement of Rosa Parks. So I can see Mary's point. I can see the point of the producers as to why they played that song. So,
well, it takes a little bit of knowledge to know what Alan T. Butcher knew about that. I didn't know that.
Okay.
He's a bit of a whiz.
Yes. Right then, so moving on to the newest feed, Alan T. Butcher's Adam had written down the president as Slick Willy. And then the anti-CIA procedure is improving. And Ian Kirk said, Ryan met Martin Luther King and did not warn him to duck.
No!
I suppose we move on to feedback. Right, before we move on to the standard feedback, because I've got the page open, I'm going to have a look, see what was written on your... Kirby actually said, can someone else post a request for feedback? And he went and did it himself anyway. Did anybody else?
I didn't see that until after he'd done it, because I would have done it.
Yeah.
He's got no patience, that man.
Okay. Alan T. Butcher says...
Yeah, I've done anything.
Because he said about... Kirby mentioned the fact that the clocks have gone back here in Great Britain. and mentioned BST. We're actually in GMT at the moment. Kirby, you donut. That's what Alan T. said. BST? That seems very doubtful.
Alan and I both appeared to have insomnia last night, so we were both still up when the clock...
That would clash with Doctor Who. Wouldn't it be GMT? Surely, yes. American people, for your information, when the clocks are in daylight saving mode in the summer, it becomes BST, which is British Summertime. When it goes back to the normal time period, it becomes Greenwich Mean Time, which is GMT. We're in Greenwich Mean Time now, and it means it gets dark very early, and it suddenly become extremely cold.
It's bright again.
I beg your pardon?
I've got a watch that I can't change the time on, but I keep it.
Well, it's right 6 months out of the year.
That is so you, Debbie.
I can wear it again.
That's our fate next weekend. Our clocks go back then.
Yeah, so we all catch up with each other, don't we?
Bonfire weekend. Yay!
Debbie Moreau says he actually forgot our clocks go back in 8 minutes. Remember the time, everybody, when he forgot the clocks all over the place in the middle of a convention?
Yes.
Yeah. Fortunately, though, I think we got to actually meet most of the guests he cocked up at a recent convention. As well.
Yes.
Alan T. Butcher says transference is complete. GMT is back. And then Laurie Nick said, the episode was a game changer. The importance of this story and similar content in Doctor Who can't be stressed enough. No more allegories, stuff has just gotten real. For a sci-fi fantasy TV show, that is. Historicals that educate have been sorely missed. I think she's going to say yes, yes. This is basically what I posted on my own wall last week. Education in a world that easily forgets. My mind is still boggling that it was filmed in South Africa. That right there is, has onion-like layers of symbolism. It's a very good point, actually. Symbolism both pro and con. It was just commenting on a friend's post regarding the future space racist in the past, New Who implied space racism via Oods and the Blue People, and Earth-based racism via how Martha and Bill were treated in the past. And then there were the confusing omissions of historical racism in other episodes. Sigh. Most of us grew up with the Roddenberry ideal, a future where these hateful attitudes have been overcome. That ideal is our goal and hope. However, a Storm Cage era racist. That didn't sort of stand well with me, to be fair. It's the only part of it I'd say that didn't seem to fit for me. But I suppose racism's going to be with us forever, somewhere along the line. I don't think we can completely eradicate it, to be fair. Anyway, back to Laurie. Is both jarring and vitally important as a cautionary message, indeed. This sort of time travel story is really old school, and I love that. Is it easy or hard to change history? Who stepped on the butterfly? I ask that question every time I turn on the news. Doctor Who talks about fixing points in time. Guess this wasn't one of those. Perhaps a subtle lesson here is what we can take our hard-fought freedoms for granted. We can't take, sorry, our hard-fought freedoms are granted, yes. Yes, indeed. Thank you for that, Laurie. Brilliant stuff. And then she posted a thing about a butterfly reference, that sound of thunder. It's a Wikipedia link. Billy Kirkbright said, wonderful episode. If this is a sign of things to come, I'll be a happy man. Jeff Waddle, probably the best single episode since the show came back. Not one I'd return to very often because it's not fun, but this is as good as it gets. Lillian Robbins says, an episode everyone should see. And then I've got Ian Kirk talking about his script. So, with that in mind, my mouse has stopped again. Bear with me. I've got a very slow mouse issues, which are rather slowing down my production of Ian Kirk's feedback. I just hope it plays ball when it stops again. When it actually comes to me clicking on this, and let's get his page open. I might be able to get this to work. Normally it's a lot slicker than this, simply because my mouse moves properly. Right, here we go. I'm going to give this a go, even though it might not work at all. It stopped again. Oh, it's back again. All right, here we go. Wish me luck.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast is in Kirk. Rosa by Blackman and Chibnall. The previous story was about a race. This one was about race. They kept saying how important Rosa Parks was. Perhaps a lot of planets have a self. I think they were lucky this one was broadcast last week, as there was a spike in US political violence this week ahead of an election. Although there was little violence in the story, it might have been delayed. Montgomery is the state capital of Alabama, which is not as big as Birmingham. Not the Andy Nunny Birmingham, they have their own. According to Wikipedia, the town ordinance segregated seating on the buses, but said no one would have to give up their seat. When the bus driver Blake was sent on leave by the villain, they might have asked Graham to drive the bus. He would have been mortified. This is not the Blake you were expecting.
I hate you, man. I hate you.
Crasco the villain seemed one-dimensional, but I expect that was deliberate. As he had killed over 1,000 people, he seemed overqualified to break up a one-woman probe test, but he still failed.
Yes.
Trigger-happy Ryan sent Crasco back into the past. If he sent him far enough back, he would have had North America to himself.
Yeah.
If Crasco was gone, there was no one to stop Rosa Parks having her protest another night. Mexicans are not the enemy of the world, eh? Like those people. I don't see the point in making a fuss about the name of an asteroid. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian.
Thank you, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
That was Ian Kirk, everybody.
Hooray!
Right, I've got what is the matter with my mouth tonight? Very special feedback come through here.
Dr. Phil wanting to add in some thoughts on the most recent Doctor episode, Rosa. I think it's a very timely story that needs to be told now. It's, of course, Black History Month in the UK, and In both countries, the United States and Great Britain, there's a great deal of demonizing of various populations within each country. I'm a person who's a product of a family from Mexico and my mom's family from the Deep South. And I guess my parents got together in the Guess Who's Coming to Dinner era, the Sidney Poitier movie. My mom had, you know, an ultimatum from her parents: you marry this guy, we're never going to talk to you ever again. And they eloped, and 6 months later, my grandmother, being the better person than my grandfather, called my mom up and started to get in touch again. My father's family, you know, he was one of 12, and he was born in San Antonio, Texas, and, you know, he and his siblings were often beaten repeatedly in school whenever they tried to communicate to each other in Spanish. And so we live in a different time from that now. But, you know, there's a lot of people, indigenous Americans, people of various degrees, who've had to live with a great deal of fear. I mean, I even talked to a lot of parents of students I have today. I have families who are, I have double A students whose families are Indian, Pakistani, Hindu, Muslim. And, you know, they live in fear because they're demonized all the time in the media. You know, Hispanic members of my family are often telling me about how much they've been harassed by police in Texas. And it's when people play the, oh, I think things are too politically correct card, which happens way too often, they don't have to live with these pressures. And I'm able to hide my background to a degree because of how pale-skinned I am, but it doesn't mean that I've never faced discrimination because of it. And I get really upset when people don't try to empathize with what other people go through. Just because they haven't experienced it doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. And I hope that for many people, this will be a great opportunity to talk about what it means to be treated as the other, be it being of different ethnicity, being of a different sort, sexual orientation, of a variety of things, because we're all people, and the more diverse stories we have in our entertainment, the richer our society is. And it's not just representation of, let's have, you know, Ryan being a black character, Yaz being, you know, a Pakistani English character. It's about that all these people make up our populations. I mean, my daughter's generation in this country, the United States, is the most diverse generation in American history. And when they watch television, they want to see things. They want to see themselves represented, or people that they know represented, because it's not just about one group having more exposure than another. It's about showing the wide tapestry and interesting diversity of cultures that we all live and are surrounded by every day. And it's something that I feel very strongly about, not just because of my own background, but my wife's family is Polish, and she, of course, was harassed a great deal as an immigrant child in the United States. Her parents did not have an easy time, but they worked very hard, and they were very successful in the United States. For a brief time, we had a very diverse extended family, because my wife's sister's husband was from Hong Kong. And so we had a variety of different ethnicities at every family gathering until, well, Magdalena's sister and her husband got divorced. But, you know, I think it's important to be able to celebrate these differences between all of us, because that's what makes you know, our society is more interesting, and, you know, perspectives, you know, it's not just one idea of taking this, oh, this group of people is just blanketly this, and, you know, this group of people is blanketly that. I mean, I've talked to parents of students of mine who, you know, it's like their people treat them like they're terrorists, and they're afraid the government's going to come and take them away, and they've been living here, working and doing things like everyone else. But, you know, that's not a life that most of us, you know, worry about, you know, of people coming to take us away just because of who we are. And I think it's important to remember that, you know, to be an American or to be a member of the population of the UK, because of course you all have your particular kingdoms. Yay to all of you on the Isle of Wight.
Yay!
Yay!
But it's important for us to just think about what it likes from which everyone's perspective. It's important for Adam to have, you know, Kirby's perspective, or maybe not, depending on your point of view. you know, everyone in the podcast has a variety of interests and backgrounds and opinions, and that's why I enjoy listening to the 20 Megabyte podcast. So anyway, I'm going to get off my high horse now, but thank you for all for listening and for letting me send in my feedback. Thanks, bye.
High horse, it rather sounded a bit like a car to me, but thank you very much, Dr. Phil. Now, it did actually got me thinking before we move on to the next bit of feedback. In regards to backgrounds and things like that, it just reminded me of my sort of childhood in the 70s and 80s. And I, obviously, like everybody else, love my family very much. I mean, my family comes from all sorts of different directions. I was brought up by my grandparents for one reason or another. My grandparents moved to South Africa in the 1950s, where they had two of their children, my Auntie Jane and my Uncle Will. And they came back to Britain with a very apartheid attitude, because apartheid was actually still running at that particular point. They came back in the 60s, about 1963 or something like that. And so when I was when I started living with them at the age of five, this sort of racism was sort of bandied around quite a lot. It wasn't sort of really grew to violent racism. It was an attitude towards black people, and references that they used to use to sort of speak about them. It wasn't ever the N-word, I will say that. It's a certain word that they used to use in South Africa. But, I mean, he was quite derogatory, my granddad specifically, about it. But when he actually came face to face with any ethnic people, he was fine with them. He never sort of was sort of off with them. He talked to them quite normally. But then, you know, he'd talk about the people he knew in South Africa. He even talked about his servants they had in South Africa, his black servants, in an affectionate way, probably because they looked after their children quite nicely, you know, as they would do. But on the flip side of it, my mother's sister, my Auntie Hillary, married a man from Ghana, and obviously all their children are mixed race. And there's a huge family in London descended from that. And I'm very proud of that side of my family, and I'm very proud of my Pearson side of the family. So there's a complete contrast. I mean, I wasn't tainted. My attitude wasn't tainted by my grandparents' inbred sort of racism. I just found it extremely irritating when they knew full well that I was quite proud to have relatives that were of mixed race. And so that was just quite, it just sort of reminded me of that fact. So thank you, Dr. Phil, for that. I suppose I've got to see if we've got some more feedback, actually. Where's my little button here? Oh, well, press right there. Well, I think I saw something from... Oh, my thing stopped again. Oh, it's back again. We've got Josh.
Hang on a sec, Adam. Hang on. Tom, what? Did you want to say anything quickly about Rosa Parks?
I just thought it was an absolutely brilliant episode. It was so opening. It was so good that they actually took a chance and went somewhere quite deep with it.
Yes.
Whilst the series so far has been quite light and fluffy, which is great, and I thoroughly enjoyed that side of it, which is actually my favourite side of Doctor Who, is the fun stuff. I genuinely was nearly crying at the end of it, especially as it resonates so much with me. I mean, I have, you know, a lot of friends who I hear these horror stories from, and the way the world appears to be turning, to actually point out that you can stand up and go, no.
Yeah.
You know, It does bring a whole heap of rubbish down on your head.
Don't think the cat agreed with you, but...
Yeah, that totally agreed then.
Yeah, no, I thought it was absolutely brilliant episode.
Now, this, that's another point you remind me of something I wanted to say. BBC television, this is what the BBC is all about, programmes like this. And this is why I almost worship the BBC as an organisation. This is why I'm quite happy to pay the licence fee. The BBC is an amazing service that we as British people should be proud of, not knocking it and stuff like that, because without the BBC, we really wouldn't... The BBC is the benchmark for all drama on British television. Yes, obviously ITV have adverts to pay for theirs, but without the BBC to lay that sort of benchmark for dramas and creativity, British TV would be a crap place. I'm just saying that. Sorry, that's my little rant about anti-BBCers. Right then, Joshua Dybal says, Rosa Parks and Other Thoughts. Found the first two stories watchable but lacking in story. Only 6 out of 10 for them both, I'm afraid. But Rosa was first class, a solid 9 out of 10. It's the first episode in the series which I wanted to watch again. Great to see Doctor Who going back to its roots and succeeding with proper education historical story. Now, that warms my heart, because I didn't, when I actually said that in my review of it, I didn't even think anybody else would think the same as me, but there you go. Isn't it amazing to think that these events only happened 8 years before Doctor Who started? Well, I hadn't thought of that one. Good point.
We didn't point that out at all, did we?
There's been lots of discussion about the swap over of the usual end credit music with Rise Up, but I don't think it's a big deal. The Doctor Who theme might have belittled this big moment in history. Racism is still a big problem in our time and in the future, as our time travelling meddling monk wannabe demonstrates.
I wouldn't mind having that music play over the credits at the end. I just wanted some rousing civil rights music to play over Rose's big moment.
Yeah, it's probably true, actually. Could have done a bit of both, couldn't they, Mary, to be fair?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Methinks prejudice won't ever disappear. It's probably inbuilt part of human nature, an animal instinct we share with many other animals. But what makes us human is the ability to put blocks against those sort of ridiculous notions. But yes, I've also considered myself that racism is part of human nature, but it's not a very nice part. I mean, there's violence is also a part of human nature, and war and stuff like that, and it's just one of those things that I just wish it could be possible to eradicate. Moving on. But well done to Doctor Who for bringing it up and giving respect to those who fight for freedom and equality. It was a great follow-up to the same issue raised by Thin Ice. Rosa Parks was mentioned in the musical I was in last year, Made in Dagenham. The Dagenham Ford car factory ladies fighting for equal pay mentioned her as an inspiration for making a stand. Before that, I'd never heard of her. Focusing on the Doctor for a moment, I hate to say it, but Jodie Foster's not really doing it for me yet. I've always welcomed the possibility of a female Doctor, and I've no problem with the idea, but I'm struggling a little and can't identify quite why. But then again, I've always been dubious when a new Doctor arrives. When Tom Baker regenerated into Peter Davison, it pained me. Colin Baker's arrival brought despair, and it even took me a long while to accept Peter Capaldi, an amazing Doctor, in the end. So I know you have to stick with it and give it plenty of time. On a more positive note, I'm loving the new companions, especially Graham. Bradley Walsh is a superb actor, only known to many as a presenter of the Chase Quiz. I think a lot of people were dubious about him, but as we can see, he puts in a fine performance. I love his down-to-earth take on things. His comment about there never being enough time to eat tickled me. My dad knows him from his showbiz days back in the 80s and always says he's a top guy. He was super friendly when I bumped into him unloading his golf clubs at Cromer Royal last summer, and didn't hesitate grabbing my phone off me to take a photo of us together. This is unlike Bruce Forsyth, who once told me to F off under similar circumstances back when I was a teenager. Rosa deserves to be counted as one of the best episodes of Doctor Who. I hope there's more of this to come. Still not much of the TARDIS to be seen. Seems a bit shadowy and dark. Wondering if we're going to see much of the TARDIS interior at all. This would be a shame. Why aren't there more episodes in the TARDIS itself? Long live the invasion of time coming up soon on 20 Megabyte. Well, in the new year, or the way things are going at the moment. Anyway, really looking forward to the spider shenanigans tonight. Hope it hits the right spot for me again. Best wishes to all. Josh. Thanks, Josh. And thanks for leaving me with an absolute novel to read.
Yeah, really.
More of that. I'll send that one over to Debbie next time. I know Deb was really concerned about a certain aspect of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, which I'm hoping to alleviate for in a moment, because I'm just about to turn the fire on. Alexa, front room fire on.
Okay.
Yes. I'm suddenly getting very cold. Don't quite understand why. Right, anyway, sorry, back to the episode. I do apologize. Oh, my mouse is just stuck again. Sorry about
that. Not again.
Technical difficulties.
When my mouse does that, I just have to shut down and reboot my computer.
Oh, it does it all the time, Mary. I think it's just my mice are completely worn out. But, so there you go. Hang on, let's see. I do. It does settle down at some point.
You've got three blind mice.
Tempted to deduct a point for that, but I can't be bothered. Anyway, well, my fire's on there. Hopefully
we're thinking of cosplaying as the three blind mice next year.
It does actually say scene, so that means that the current link we're about to embark on is about to be read by Mrs. Debbie.
Oh, my God.
That's what she said, by Mrs. Debbie Melrose.
I hope I do this justice, Alan. I do apologise in advance to everyone listening, because I usually botch this up. Rising up by sitting down, or wacko racists, the previous generation... Oh, my God. Dear 20 Megabyters, Rosa is, of course, a closely studied historical story about a very significant episode in the American civil rights movement of the 1950s. I clearly do not need to explain the direct message it portrays regarding the issues depicted, which it puts over straightforwardly and effectively through the means of pushing the historical narrative out of shape, thus requiring correction from my heroes. However, the story demonstrates the importance of small acts of resistance and protest in the general case by portraying this inspirationally specific instance. This is a timely message when some have started to wake from the slumber of indolence and apathy and the convenient acceptance that they cannot make a difference. It is vital we take on board that past generations have been in more powerless positions than we have, and yet maintain the fortitude and resilience to fight hard with the urgent insistence on hope, rising above doubt and cynicism. They fought because they had to, not because it was easy, and they fought despite the cost and not in the grasping expectancy of immediate gratification. Additionally, there are great pains taken here to demonstrate that we cannot rely upon progress to be either permanent, immediate, nor assured. Krasko demonstrates the grim truth that despicable ideas can live on and re-emerge, and the only bulwark against those that divide us and hide behind walls is our own willingness to keep up the fight against them. It should be noted that while some suggest that the villain in this is not very good, they are failing to recognise the real enemy here is the inexcrable injustice of embedded racism, and there are a few more fiendish and despicable malignancies than that. Yes, that is a point. We also learn that the Abbey Lerner from the SS Pentallion, where the Doctor encountered a sentient star for a period of about 42 minutes, was in fact Rosa Parks, who survived much longer than is currently understood. All in all, Rosa is a highly derivative retelling of the 1965 serial The Time Meddler. Peter Butterworth's replacement is less entertaining, but in every other respect, the production is an exceptionally successful realisation of this iteration of Doctor Who plot types, with significantly greater verisimilitude. No, I can't say it. Blank than most traditional historicals in the show's early days. Fine acting, emotive storytelling, almost all punches not pulled. Seldom have we had a better reason to be proud of our beloved programme. I have seen a little criticism of the use of Andra Day's Rise Up at the denouement of the story, despite the very compelling appropriateness of its use in the context, both in terms of content and the erstwhile associations of the song. This story is perhaps 32 seconds too long, as an asteroid being called Rosa Parks is a significantly less impressive ending than the lady herself. Next up, Doctor Who and the returnees from Metabelis, or Atacopian Can.
Metabelis, Debbie.
What's Alan T. Butcher? Isla was shouting Atacop throughout this episode.
Aragog, you mean?
Atacop. Thing, Adam.
Right. Facebook is letting me down quite considerably tonight, as the second video feed shut itself down. We're now on the third. It's a record for us on Facebook. But I can pick up on some of the things that were said on the previous one. Ian Kirk says, Ryan met Martin Luther King and did not warn... we did that one, didn't we?
Yes.
Sorry. Alan T. Butcher said, Barbara. Laurie Nick said, applause. And then Alan T. Butcher said, it's another interruption by the Secret Services. And Mary Blitz Lang said, the broadcast has paused. Thanks for that, Mary. You could have told me that before, but never mind.
And then Alan T. Butcher, I did the time.
Did you?
Yeah,
it was a while ago.
Did I take it in?
No.
Alan T. Butcher said, the anti-CIA procedure is improving. And then Mary Blitz Lang said, and now ended. Cheers for that, Mary. So now it's began again. Mm-hmm. And see what's happening. Oh, Laurie Nick said, phew, my blood pressure is back to normal. Feed's back. What's that mean? Oh, the feed.
The feed. Yes.
Four people watch. These people really do stick with the show.
Well, Alan, did you have to get to hear me botch his feed?
Do you know? No, he didn't. Sorry about that, Alan. You have to listen to the show. Right then, I might have to see if we can get something going on YouTube in regards to live video, because Facebook is going a bit pants. Or it might be just my computer. I don't know. We'll find out later. So we can move on to... That's it for feedback. I just double check I'm right with that one. Feedback. I might have... Yes, that is indeed it for feedback. Thank you for those who fed back. And if you wish to feed back to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, it's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com, where you too can send emails and audio messages and stuff. Or you can just join the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join... and comment on various requests for feedback, or just on the live feed, as a lot of people are doing tonight. So now we can look at Doctor Who news. Been quite a good episode today, hasn't it, really? Everybody, don't really like political stuff, but as it's a political subject, I will let everybody off this week. Right.
Yes.
Arachnids in the UK. There's some pictures posted on the DoctorWhoNews.net page. Rather nice little pictures. The actor that... I don't want to talk too much about that episode, but there was an actor on it sort of Deb said, ooh, he's in it. American actor. Apparently he was in Sex and the City.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there you go. So it was quite interesting that she knew somebody who was on it. Right, moving on. Right there, Doctor Who, live escape game, Worlds Collide, the BBC Studios and Escape Hunt have today revealed the official name of the forthcoming Doctor Who, the live escape game, will be called Worlds Collide. Any idea what that's all about? No, not me either. Ghost Monument.
Distracted me.
Yeah, Ghost Monument official ratings, 9 million.
Ooh.
That's quite a lot, everybody. It said 8.67 million watched the episode on a conventional TV set. However, the Barb 4 screen dashboard shows that an additional 184,000 watched on their PCs, and 83,000 watched on a tablet device, and 64,000 watched on smartphone. These figures make Doctor Who the fourth most watched programme of the week ending October the 14th. I wonder if they've taken those figures into consideration on previous seasons of Doctor Who, whether the actual figures would have been a bit higher than they were originally, you know, said to be. Ghost Monument had an appreciation index score of 82, scoring the higher... with women than men. There you go. Coronation Street managed to get 8 million and was fifth in the weekly chart. So I think they're trying to imply that Doctor Who beat Coronation Street.
Maybe for the first time.
No, we used to beat it quite regularly, didn't we, in the Tennant year. And Strictly Come Dancing got 12.03 million viewers. I tell you what, if anybody watched Strictly Come Dancing last year, Bruno Tognoni wasn't available, so they had that chap from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, no, not Will Smith, the other bloke, on as a guest judge, and he was fantastic. And we were all saying, keep him on there. kick off Bruno and let's keep him. But Bruno's back. Here we go. I did see something. Oh, did anybody watch Pointless? Well, did you watch Pointless, Debbie?
No, I don't watch it.
That's a shame, because it was. I caught the end of it, and it was Blake Seven versus Doctor Who. Now, the Blake Seven actors are the one that played oh, what's that one, the funny one at Blake 7 that I always liked? I can't remember his name. And Avon, played by the other chap who played Avon. But anyway, he's in a wheelchair, the one who played Avon.
Paul
I didn't
Darrow played Avon.
Yeah, Paul Darrow, did he say? Yeah. But he was in a wheelchair. I didn't recognise him, and there was a calling him Paul, but I can't remember the tall bloke. There was four or five main characters, wasn't there? And I can't remember their blimmin' names, apart from Avon. But yeah, he was in a wheelchair, and I didn't really recognise him. I was quite shocked, actually. But they won, beating Peter Davison and Katie Manning. I thought it was a very odd pairing, Peter Davison and Katie Manning. They're never together in Doctor Who. Big Finish Productions are yet to release a new set of audio adventures featuring some more iconic characters from the days of UNIT. When Tim Treloar and Katie Manning return as the Doctor and Joe Grant. Oh, so the Tim Treloar plays the Third Doctor. That's quite interesting.
Yes, he does. He does a really good job of it, too.
Oh, brilliant. I have to listen to that. And it's Third Doctor Adventures Volume 5. They'll be joining forces with three other characters from 1970s Doctor Who, the Brigadier, Benton and Liz Shaw. I wonder who plays the Brig. That's quite interesting. Because that's a very distinctive voice to try and imitate, isn't it?
Yes, yeah.
Returning alongside the Brigadier is Liz Shaw, the first companion of the Third Doctor. She will be portrayed by Daisy Ashford. Hello. It's asking to reload the site now.
Jeez.
Should I give up with the live feed? Oh, no, it's still running at the moment. Oh, no, it's just running on delay. Oh, good grief. So we'll look it up. So, right, yes, Daisy Ashford, the daughter of the original Liz Shaw actress, Caroline John. That's good. So she's playing... Caroline John's daughter is playing her mum as a different character. It's confusing. But that, yeah, it's quite nice. I always thought that, they could get Sean Pertwee to play some version of the Third Doctor, because he does actually look like him, but the voice isn't quite the same.
Love that.
Yeah. Plus, returning to play Sergeant Benton is John Nuts Levine, because he is absolutely bonkers. Let's hope he can keep the F words out of his performance. John first played the part of Benton, who was then a corporal in the Second Doctor story adventure, Invasion. He didn't? Yes, he did. I thought he was actually in the Web of Fear, wasn't he? But he played a Yeti in it, I believe. Yeah, moving on. That's quite an interesting article. I wasn't expecting to be so interested in it. Rosa, press reaction. Radio Times said, oh, can you read this, Deb? Oh, you haven't got it up, have you?
I haven't got it up. Otherwise, I'll start going...
Radio Times felt, by tackling historical subjects, the series returning to its roots. Roots for an episode about... yeah, it's a very good choice of word. Mirror considers the episode a very important one of the series. Good. Independent singles out the lead actress for much praise. That's, I think, obviously Jodie, but I think the actress who actually played Rosa Parks deserves some praise as well. Telegraph says, dislike the episode, thinking it stodgy. Bugger off, Telegraph. You don't know what blimmin' hell you're talking about. Thought it was stodgy when allowed to riff on history rather than be combined by it. Blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to read that. Dan of Geek praised the actress taking on difficult role of Rosa Parks. So that's Vinette Robinson, apparently. But she was very good. And Digital Spy praised the way the episode tackled difficult issues. So we've now learned from that not to bother with the Daily Telegraph, everybody. And the overnight viewing figures for Rosa were only 6.39, so they did jump up a bit. But yeah, Doctor Who's doing okay at the moment. Let's hope it stays that way. There's no need for the creaking door sound effect. Is that Kirby coming back in? Okay, let's have a look for the old sponsors. Because with Christmas coming and the fact that Who won sold quite a lot of stuff at IslandCon, they'll be looking to restock and sell stuff to you listeners. Okay. The 13th Doctor Sonic Screwdriver was a very popular thing at IslandCon, and they have them in stock. Oh, no, it says pre-order. But they did have them in stock, didn't they, Debbie? That
yeah,
can't be
they
right.
Did, yeah.
So don't bother. There's a pre-order button, but they're there. Unless they're saying they're pre-order because they sold them out at IslandCon, but you can get them for $14.99. What else we got here? Latest products. DWM 531, with the Doctor and Graham on the cover. And then DWM Special Story of Doctor Who, with the all the Doctors on the cover, with Jodie at the front, obviously. Invasion from Space, the CD. It's a Peter Burvis reads two vintage stories. And then it's a laptop case of the shape of the TARDIS. The 13-inch laptop, that's a difficult thing to say, 13-inch TARDIS-themed fabric zip case. Say it as it reads out, there's a laptop case, priced $8.99. I wonder if my MacBook Air would fit into that. Might be worth getting one of them. Story so far, which is a Bernice Summerfield CD. Lots of Big Finish stuff available at whoone.go.uk. But probably more useful items for those commuters of yours, like the travel mug, $8.99. It's a TARDIS travel mug. Cool.
Need one of them for my new job. You're not allowed to have normal cups in there, so I need to go and buy a travel mug again.
Yeah, up to Who Won to get those things. So, yes, whoone.co.uk are our friends and long-term sponsors, who I'm hoping, due to myself, are going to have some sort of pact with our other sponsors, lavazi.co.uk. And Lavazi have brought out a line of new and shorter Doctor Who scarves.
They look good, yeah.
That's for shorties, basically. So if you're 5 foot or under, wearing a... how long are the scarves when they're at the normal length? But I suppose you can wrap it around yourself quite a lot, but you can end up tripping over it, I would imagine, at some point. So they bought out scarves.
More cool, maybe a commuter scarf or something.
Yeah, safety scarves. We call them safety scarves. So that's for season 18, because they did have a shorter version for the standard Tom Baker scarf, along with the Paisley items from the Seventh Doctor, some very snazzy TARDIS and Dalek scarves, and other products that aren't Doctor Who related. Yes, go to lavazia.co.uk, where you can also get sweaters and jumpers, the Seventh Doctor sweater, and the Fifth Doctor cricket jumper, all available. On sale, we also have umbrellas, not the Seventh Doctor umbrella, which I am a very proud owner of, but you can get a TARDIS umbrella, now knocked down to $21.99, and a Time Lord sort of landscape with the TARDIS on it umbrella for just £16.99. lavazi.co.uk for your Christmas gifts for your loved ones. So, next week, I don't even know what the episode title is for next week's episode, but it does look rather enthralling. But we're going to be talking about...
It's the UK, isn't it? Something like that?
I'm talking about the one afterwards. But next week, we are reviewing Arachnids in the UK, yes. So, if you like spiders, you're okay. If you're sort of slightly uneased by spiders... you might want to do what my wife did, and that is have a blanket up to your nose so you can just duck underneath it when the spiders come onto the screen.
Yeah, we're terrified of spiders, Isla and I, and we literally sort of went, oh my God, together at one point, but wasn't as scary as I was hoping.
I think you gradually got used to them as the story went on. But initially, they were a bit sort of creepy.
I was just hoping for Isla to actually be absolutely terrified.
It was a proper Doctor Who episode for me, especially when the man gets dragged down the plug hole. I thought that was quite a yes, that's Doctor
Mary,
Who.
You've been a lover. Spoilers!
But yes, no spoilers there. It's not really part of the story, but it is a scene to behold, you know, in the episode itself. But it's an episode also that we start to engage even more with the new companions, and I do hope that if there's going to be another series of Doctor Who, and the way things are going with this series, as long as BBC's got some money, there will be. And Bradley Walsh, please stay. You're fantastic. I love Bradley Walsh. All right, that's it then. So as of that'll be next time. This time next week, in fact, we'll be doing that. I apologise for the dodgy Facebook feed, which has stopped yet again. I'll be looking into the possibility of doing a live thing on YouTube and just posting the link to Facebook. Maybe that's going to be a bit more stable, fingers crossed. But until next week, thank you for listening and watching. I'll say that to the show. Oh. See you again. I was just about to say I hope Kirby will be back, but I'm not quite sure I'm going to hope that. Well, he probably will be. I'm only joking. Anyway, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
You're broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we gon' walk it out. Move mountains, we gon' walk it out and move mountains. And I rise up, I rise like the day. I rise up, I rise unafraid. I rise up, and I do it a thousand times again. And I rise up, I like the waves. I rise up, in spite of the ache. I rise up, and I do it a thousand. Silence is quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet. Move mountains, bring it to its feet.
Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation. No copyright infringement intended.